This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. My guest today, live in the JPR studios, is none other than Future Man. Hello.
Hey, it's good to be here.
It is a pleasure to meet you. Mm-hmm. Roy Future Man Wooten, known to many of you as the percussionist drummer for the band Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. Over 25 years of history with that band at this point. Couple of years off.
Yeah.
Some hiatus years, but 28 or so years.
Yeah. It was the fall of 1988 that we came together for a one-time performance at the end of a PBS special called the Lonesome Pine Special. Bela wanted to do a jazz band, and he had this notion of putting together a group of musicians and using the banjo in a jazz setting, which he was getting a lot of resistance to the idea. And when he called and asked me about it, to be a part of it, I really encouraged him on the idea of bringing the banjo into jazz, because the banjo actually used to be the guitar of jazz. Growing up, seeing Louis Armstrong and his Hot Five in the middle, you see that banjo. And I said, Bela, man, if you get this right, man, you could bring the banjo right back to a place to where it actually belongs. And so many years later, man, you see Bela with Chick Corea doing duets and stuff. And I think the banjo is very much at home.
Well, it definitely worked out. 5 Grammy wins over the years. Congratulations on those.
Thank you.
You are from a pretty darn musical family.
Yes.
Your brother Victor has been in for a live session here at JPR, and there are more of you Wootons.
Yeah. Victor is the youngest of 5 brothers. So there's Victor, who's the youngest. Then there's my brother Joseph, who plays keyboards. I don't know if you have you had Joseph?
No.
Joseph plays keyboard with the Steve Miller Band.
Oh, right on. Send him by.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We hear it's official. But he's probably out right now with Steve Miller Band. They do a lot of work during the summers, traveling all around the country and the world, and he's been doing that. And then I had a brother, saxophone player, brother named Rudy, who passed away a couple of years ago. He was the middle brother. And then there's me, drums, and then my oldest brother, Reggie, who's the teacher, the one that taught Victor and Joseph to play. So that's, they still call him the teacher, because he just, for some reason, man, this guy can teach, man. Wow. He can just explain stuff. So, yeah.
I want to circle back around to that, because there is a teaching component of this event that goes on in Siskiyou County. And a little bit later, I want to talk about how you integrate what you do and your approach to music of young string players.
Yeah.
Most young kids start out banging on things, right? Was that you also? Did you start off as a percussion fanatic?
Yeah, for some reason, all of the brothers, it started off with me, Reggie, and Rudy, the first 3, and we just all kind of liked and gravitated to what we liked to do, and I liked to beat on boxes. Rudy loved to play anything with wind, and Reg was just always could master the guitar.
So the split was natural then?
The split was natural.
Interesting.
And by the time Victor and Vic came, Reg had already started showing Joseph the keyboards, and all we needed was a bass player, we'd have a band. So Vic was sort of assigned the bass, and we hoped that it was a match, you know. Well, he said, man, we look at his hands, he looks like he's a bass player, and sure enough, so many years later, we can see that it was a good match.
Yeah, that's worked out okay for him,
hasn't
it?
It's worked okay, you know.
How did you get the nickname Future Man?
Future Man, actually, wow, this relates to this camp, because Tristan was just telling me how, you know, they looked at Mark O'Connor and different people doing educational work, and it was Mark O'Connor, a great fiddle player, and Jerry Douglas, great dobo player, that saw the Flecktones performing in Nashville at the Station Inn Bluegrass Club, and we're playing this crazy Flecktonic music in the Station Inn, which is a traditional bluegrass club. We took a break at intermission, came back. Jerry or Mark shook my hand, and he said when he shook my hand that it felt like I didn't have any bones. And, you know, we're pumped up because it's the second set. We're playing crazy music and da-da-da. And he just felt the energy through my hands. He said it felt like I didn't have any bones. And he just said, he's the future, man. And I heard this story. You know, by that time, you know, we do a few dates. Bela would go back on Newgrass, and I was back in Virginia. But I heard the story. They said, man, he's the future, man, right? But then they followed up and wrote a song called Future Man, which was the first song on the Strength in Numbers record, which is sort of like an all-star bluegrass kind of group, Americana group, with Bela, Edgar, Mark O'Connor, Jerry Douglas, Sam Bush. It seems like there's somebody I'm forgetting. But those groups, the first song on that was called Future Man. So soon when that music theme music came, I was like, okay, it's sticking, because, you know, I got a theme song now.
Future Man is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. Okay, you have brought in what exactly? Because for folks that maybe have never seen you perform live, percussionist is a bit of a general term for what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
What is this thing that you have brought in?
Yeah, well, what I have in front of me here is an instrument like I'm beating on, and it's doing just like the instrument that you see me playing with Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, where I'm tapping on these pads, but they sound like drum.
We'll get a photo of this up on our website, but it's essentially a triangular piece of wood with a bunch of little black touchpads on it.
Right, but the key thing about this one is that anybody can buy this now. See, the ones I play with the Flecktones are one of a kind of experiments.
Because that first one was a hacked apart synthax, right? It was like Lee Ritenour's guitar controller, and you tore it apart and made a drum controller out of it.
Yes, because when I got it, I thought that the instrument would be done and it was finished, right? But when we got to it in the tapping where I needed it, the dynamics weren't there. The dynamics were from the strings. Mm. And I needed to be able to tap up and down the neck with dynamics, with soft and loud. And a friend of mine named Chris DeHaas told me when I got the instrument that it wasn't going to satisfy what I needed. And I really didn't want to hear that at the time. But it meant that I had to go to the drawing board and we had to dig deep, man. And I was like, man, I'm going to have to destroy this instrument in order to get it to live. You know, to breathe what I need to do.
Does that thing still work?
Yes, but it's retired.
Yeah?
Yes.
So this is a commercially available version
yes,
of that?
Yes, yeah. And this is a version of the Zen drum, Z-E-N drum. You can go to zendrum.com and you can just order a model. But this particular model is a model the way I played it. Because when the Zen drum came out, you play it a certain way with the triangular in here, but when I picked it up, I picked it up with the sharp end in my left hand,
like a guitar,
it was upside down. They said, don't tell him he's playing it upside down. They said it was just like Hendrix, man. I was playing this thing all wrong.
For a lot of drummers that play the set,
yeah,
muscle memory is huge.
Yes.
Right? I mean, knowing mm-hmm. exactly where that ride is or the hi-hat is, and for all of those years of playing the synthax, you knew where everything was.
Yeah.
This is a different layout.
Yeah, and really, and as far as today, right now, my sounds are set up for my other instrument that I play with the Flecktones. So I don't all the way know where everything is on here today. It's funny, I was messing with this the other day, and I almost made a layout, but I just didn't. It was right before the NAMM show. But I can still play. I mean, you just find stuff and you hit it, you know?
And it's interesting, I can see over your shoulder that you've got a visual display of a drum set.
Yeah.
That sort of triggers every time you touch on one of the pads.
Yeah, it's like a video game almost, you know. And what's fun about this is this library that I'm playing right now, I actually did the sounds. You know, there was a sampling session by a company called Tune Tracks. So you can actually buy this library. The new library is called Roots and Rods, and I'm on the cover. You see us in the studio. So I'm hitting sounds that I already hit.
And if you two have good enough rhythm, you can sound like Future Man.
Yeah, you just go in time. And for something that I'm going to talk about during this camp, whatever you do, if you just pour it in rhythm, so whatever you thinking, if you put it in some kind of time, it allows your thoughts to breathe like art.
It's Future Man live today on Jefferson Public Radio.
Having fun.
Information on him online. FutureManLive.com is the web address.
Mm-hmm.
If you close your eyes, it's actually hard to tell that you're not actually playing a real set of drums.
Right. Now, what's beautiful, like, if you take the Flectones journey from the very beginning, the very first record, I was trying to do this stuff, but the sounds just weren't available. The sampling, it just wasn't available. So I was using the very first digital samples that came from the Elesis HR16, which was 16-bit, high resolution 16. And those are the first, and there wasn't enough, man. But when I listen to those records now, I almost laugh that I even tried to do it with those little sounds.
Well,
man,
some of these little, like, 8 and 16-bit Casio keyboards are starting to show up again in indie pop. So
yeah, because now they kind of have their own little sound.
Right.
But I was trying to do something very realistic. And for me, I was just trying to get as realistic as the sounds that I hear from Miles Davis and Tony Williams and those drummers. I was trying to get there. So many years later now, if you listen to the first Flectones records, I was using an HR16 and an Add-1 system. And I would go between the HR16, which was real glassy, real thin, and I said, well, look, it doesn't really sound like a cymbal, so I'll treat it like a flat ride. It doesn't have the air, but I'll play it like it's a flat ride, and I would go between the Add-1, and just, it was smoke and mirrors, because neither one of them was good enough, right? But I got it done, and so many years later now with the Flectones, I'm crossing now between my live cymbals and these cymbals, which are samples of my live cymbals. This, what I'm actually playing right now is a new library called Roots and Rods, where it's me hitting the drums with the rods and the brushes. Like this right here, that's not a full stick, it's a rod. It's not a brush, it's right in the middle. So it's really nice to, cause I'm, it's really nice to hear these sort of softer sounds. So it's fun to play with these sounds. These are rods now. So the library has me hitting with mallets and brushes and rods.
In recent years, your musical journey has started to connect the dots between percussion and piano.
Yes.
Without getting too esoteric for folks that are not particularly into musical theory.
Yes.
Tell me how you got started down that road and what you're trying to uncover or discover.
Right. So for me, this has been a journey. The whole reason I even play drums like this is because I wanted to explore the drums even as deep as I can and to be able to see if I can use my fingers to play what I play with sticks.
And we should say, you're a monster traditional drummer too.
Yeah, because that's kind of where I started
yeah.
from. So I'm just trying, I love all that Buddy Rich and, you know, all that kind of crazy technique stuff. You know, I love that stuff. And I wanted to try to see if I can just apply Mama Daddy. You know, if I can play Mama Daddy, 5-stroke roll, paradiddle, 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 triple, 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 I'm doing that now all with my fingers, and it sounds like stick technique. But as soon as, when I'm doing it with sticks, it's this hand and that hand going back and forth. Here, when I'm doing these doubles and stuff, it's moving between my fingers. See how I'm using four fingers to do that? That means that I can split them. Already that's starting to get very piano-esque. I'm seeing the rudimental stroke as a horizontal plane. It's very melodic. So long story short, now this hand drumming is getting where I can choose different notes for the drums in my fingers. I can play rhythms, and I can choose melodies to go along with those rhythmic patterns. So long story short, as I'm developing these instruments for the Flectones, I developed the piano version of this.
And is this the Royale?
The Royale.
Yeah, I've seen like a couple of fleeting images of this thing, and it looks like an electric piano, sort of, but all of the keys have these colored dots on them.
Yeah, they're colored dots, and they got these little picks coming off the piezos underneath them. Underneath here, there's these little piezo sensors that when you touch them, they send out an electric spark depending on how you hit them. This is some Mother Nature stuff, you know, but it's very sensitive. And so underneath that piano, there's a piezo underneath, and there's a guitar pick on end of that piezo so that I can press that guitar pick, and it gives just a little bit. but it allows me to play the pick and then slide off the pick and then pluck back up with a flamingo kind of technique, a down and up kind of technique. These are experimental techniques that I'm working on now.
Are they percussion sounds built into the thing, or
any kind of sounds, right? Huh. So I was going to play you an example of something that I'm working on here. I traveled for a few years with a group I called the Black Mozart Ensembles, and it was mostly fiddle players. And what I was doing that for was to flesh out this music that I had composed on this keyboard. You know, I composed this music on this keyboard, and this is crazy, man. I was using dynamics. I want to see if the audience can follow what I'm saying here. We're going to talk about this about rhythm. But I'm using dynamics now to also choose what note I'm going to play. So imagine that I'm playing a trumpet, right? A trumpet only has three notes. It doesn't have 24 keys. It's only three notes. How does it get the other notes? Well, I hit this key. My armature is loose, I get a D. Little tighter, F. Little tighter, B. Little tighter, another F at the top. See, the armature, the tightening and the loosening of the armature is changing the notes. So I was using the soft and the loud of the dynamics to change the notes on my keys. Whoa, man, this is like,
Probably the most familiar example of this for folks that don't play music are those little whirligig things that little kids play. They're that little plastic hose. And the faster you spin it,
there you go,
it jumps a harmonic part.
That's
right?
It
jumps
That's
up to
it.
A higher note.
Right, that's it, just by the difference of intensity. So my intensity on my keys is the dynamics. If I hit it soft, I get one note. A little bit harder, whoa, it changes the notes, another falsetto. A little bit harder, another note. And so I have four notes assigned all over my keyboard. So if I just play a rhythm, any rhythm, some type of melody is going to come out. Very organic. It's quicker than I can think.
That sounds ridiculously difficult.
But it's so simple because it's quicker than you can think. It's like Bruce Lee, don't think. Just play something that feels good. And let's listen to how it sounds. So I was going to play you an example of something that just feels good, right?
Future Man is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. All right, what are you going to showcase?
Okay, I'm going to play you an example of a piece that I'm working on, right? And because I'm doing it, right, the melody is coming out of the rhythm. So there's a lot of rhythm going to it. So now I'm at the stage of finishing stuff. Because I've done rhythm, I've got with beat makers and stuff to help me add beats to the rhythms that the strings are playing. I got with orchestrators, and we orchestrated this. And now I'm with my brother Vic. I'm saying, Vic, man, I need something. I need some bottom on this. I need something, right? This is Vic playing. He doesn't know what's going to happen in the tune. The tune is, I can't even explain the tune. He's just responding to the piece. And this is the famous St. George. And you'll notice when you hear the strings in the back, I'll kind of talk you through it. You hear that kind of do-si-do. And this movement is movement 5 of an 8-movement symphonic work dedicated to Chevalier St. George, who was a string player. He was a violinist. Disappeared to history because he was a mixed-race violinist. But his story is so exciting because it's right in the heart of classical music. It's right during the time of Mozart.
Okay.
And he was the superstar. So, like, Mozart and them looked up to him. And Mozart would stay in France in poverty in order to have his pieces performed by Chevalier St. George's orchestra because it was the leading orchestra of Europe. Now, he's disappeared to history, but you know about him because when you hear about Haydn writing the Paris symphonies, he was writing for that symphony. And the Chevalier St. George paid Haydn to write these pieces. This was the largest orchestra of Europe. It came up to 80 pieces because they started the subscription model, which is the model we use now. The significance is that now kings and queens weren't paying for it. So all they could do was come to the concert. They couldn't dictate on who they hired. So the excellence went up. And so Mozart, Haydn, all these people writing pieces for this orchestra. So the Chevalier St. George is the conductor of the Paris symphonies. And so my whole story is about this unknown hero of music who's a mixed race composer. And we're just getting a whole nother view of classical music. That's like he's also the number one sword fighter of Europe. The
really?
Number one fencer, right? So this is a story of mythological proportions, man. Because think about that. We've never had a story. I've always wanted a story where a musician is the hero. It's not just Bruce Lee. It's just not Muhammad Ali. Not just Captain America. Not just Rambo. But a virtuoso musician, right? Who's also a Bruce Lee, a Muhammad Ali. That's what this guy is. And we've never had that before, whether it's Marvel comic books or fact. See what I'm saying? Marvel is fiction. But in fact, we've never had a hero that's a musical virtuoso on this side, but a virtuoso fighter on the other side. And in that, we get to see Mozart, all of this. And I'll give you a secret to the story is that Dumas, who wrote The Three Musketeers, was writing about his dad, Alexander Dumas Sr. Alexander Dumas Sr.'s mentor was the Chevalier St. George and was the only man that he couldn't beat was the Chevalier St. George, who was smaller than him. So this is a bad man right here. And this movement is called The Famous St. George. And it's, a, you know, in the movement that I wrote on my piano, you hear the grandeur and stuff. But you hear me digging into this Americana. If you listen to the strings got all the fun, man. It's just real grand, and my brother Vic is dropping bass, and this is behind-the-scenes stuff. Now, you hear me talking. I actually film him recording his funky, crazy part we're adding, right? So see if you can just catch some of this attitude.
Watch, it's going to be a little bit of a break, and then go to the crazy. Crazy part. Oh, not yet. Now it's going to change. There's fights going on, so you can chromatic them.
Strings real hold down.
Back to the groove. Yeehaw. Crazy.
Fencing. Sword fight. On guard.
Crazy. Fight. Comes in. It's gonna end on this.
What is this piece called?
That one is called The Famous St. George, and it's movement 5 of an 8-movement work.
How far along are you? Is it all written?
It's all done. Yeah.
Available yet?
The symphonic version is available on Dart Music. There's a Dart Music that has the movement 8, 1 through 8, and just purely symphonic without the beats and everything.
Well, let's transition. Future Man is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. FutureManLive.com is the web address to learn all about him and his background and his multiple projects that he's involved with. On the surface,
yeah,
it seems like you are an unusual choice to come attend a camp and a music festival that is all about traditional American string music.
Right.
How did you get involved with this?
You know, I think I was having a conversation at a fiddle jam. See, because the fiddle players that are playing that music, right, I handpicked every person to play that. The first person I met was a classical virtuoso, but I met the kid after I had composed this stuff on my keyboards. I was hearing the samples, right? So I got with Tracy Silverman. I said, Tracy, who's an electric viola violinist, right? Tracy Silverman, who would be a great teacher here. And I said, does this music fit on your violin? And he played. He said, yeah, it's all there. It works. You know, so now I know that it exists. What I wrote off my keyboards, it took us about a year or something to transcribe it all. So I had him reading it. Does this work? He says, yeah. So now I'm just looking for some violinists, right? So I'm handpicking violinists. I'm sitting at Bongo Java. I'm saying, does anybody know a violin player? I need a violin player. Kyle Whalum, Kirk Whalum's son, sitting right here.
The jazz saxophonist.
Yes, his son, Kyle, plays bass, sitting right next to me. He says, this kid plays, he's sitting right next to Zach Casebolt. We lean forward, we look at each other, and I'm trying to ask him in my mind, are you any good? You know what I mean? It was like, and I'm like, well, if he says he is, I still got to hear him. So I changed my question, said, can we get together so I can hear you play? Man, we got together. I had some of this music, some of my first music that I composed, very difficult to read. He sight read it, and he had a crazy sound. This dude was a classical virtuoso, man. And he was living on the street, right? So here's the scene, right? This is all about storytelling, right? I'm sitting here, Bongo Java. He says, this kid can play. I look at him. I said, well, can we get together? Here's what he said. He says, yeah, we can get together, but there's just one problem. I live in a tent. Is that a problem? I said, I like this guy already. In my mind, I was going, what if this guy could play? If this guy could play, it's like a story I wouldn't even believe, right? Man, we went to his tent. Now I'm embellishing the story because he actually came from his tent and we met in Kyle Wellham's bedroom, right? But his tent is out there. We met in this, for the purpose of the story, we met in this tent, man, and he sight read this music. I still have the audio of his sight reading. He killed it. This dude was a virtuoso, man. Zach Casebolt is his name. So he became my whole thing about putting together these string players. So one of the next guys he found for me was Tyler Andahl. Right, because I'm looking for some unique Americans now because I want to try to do this music the same way the Rolling Stones do rock and roll. I want to do classical music like epic, like video games, like where it's modern, right? So the next kid he finds is this kid, Tyler Andahl. He says, man, and I'm on the road. He says, man, I gave this kid my violin and he picked it up and started playing beats. He said, most of the time if you get a violin, you start playing melodies. This kid, he says, he started playing beats out on this thing that was out of this world. And this is Tyler Andahl, who comes out of that chopping tradition, like for Casey Dreeson and them, who's his mentor, Tyler Andahl, right? And he's chopping crazy, right? So Zach is teaching him the music. We said, well, we need him for the band. He's in the ensemble, right? And so just one by one, I'm picking string players. And so we toured with these string players, and Paul Cowart actually went to India where we played this music over in India for some shows over there. But long story short is I'm pulling together different traditions. And for Tyler, who had his own genius on the violin, classical music didn't do it for him. His mom said classical music, he got the yawns, man, you know what I mean? But when he went to fiddle camp, it just woke up everything, right? And so I'm doing a house concert. When I get my first concert together, I got core string players, Zach Casebolt, Lindsey Pruitt was one of the next ones, great teacher again, who played with me. And when I got Lindsey and Zach together, so you see, I'm going through a string thing here to pull out these rhythms, right? Lindsey Pruitt, Zach Casebolt, Tyler Andahl, we had another cello player, but they're playing this music because all this music with four pieces, I can really kind of get the core of this sound. And the journey just begins right there. But for the bluegrass is what spoke to Tyler. That's what spoke to Tyler. And so this is so incredible because I got this audio too. When we're getting ready to do the house concert, even though he could do beats, he wasn't doing that in the music. I really hadn't heard him do it, right? Zach was just teaching him these violin parts. He was playing a lot of the viola parts. And so we're at the house concert, getting ready to do the house concert. The audio engineer asked him to test his violin. First of all, with Tyler, when he was working on his parts, he wanted the whole score. He didn't want just his part. He wanted to see what everybody's doing. Give him what he wants. You know what I mean? The kid wants to see the whole score. So we get to the sound check. We're sound checking for the first house concert. And the engineer asks him to test his violin. And he starts playing the whole first movement. The first movement is called Child of Slaves. Bum, 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 bum. The violin is... bum 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 bum. And I got that knocking like the Beethoven knocking at the doors of destiny. But it has more of a march type of feel. Tyler started playing the music. Boom. They said, test your violin. So he started playing the rhythm to bum 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 bum. Dunk dunk dunk. He's playing everybody part in a rhythm, man. It was so nice. I was like, wait a minute, man, do that again. I was like, that is your part, right? And so from here on, Tyler just looks at the score and he sort of creates his thing, but it's coming from the bluegrass tradition. So why I'm here maybe at the camp is like sometimes from a little distance, you can see the importance of what's going on here. The bluegrass tradition is not just a bluegrass tradition. This is Americana. And the American voice is what Europe, all of Europe has been looking to America, you know, as this great beacon of the future of classical music. A lot of that music is black music, which Dvorak came over and said, in your black music tradition, you have all that's needed for a future classical music. But it's an American tradition. He says, not just black music, it's American Indian music. And he didn't even really tap into mountain music. But Aaron Copland did. And Aaron Copland comes out of Dvorak because out around Dvorak was Reuben Goldmark, who was the first teacher of Aaron Copland and George Gershwin and Duke Ellington. See what I'm saying? So I'm just saying there's a tradition here that goes, and this Americana sound, when you hear bluegrass music, man, or mountain music, that is America's voice times 10. And you don't have to stop where Aaron Copland stopped with it. See what I mean? Man, that is not the Beethoven sound. See what I'm saying?
Right.
That is uniquely American all day long. And this is where we're supposed to go.
So when you're walking around at this camp and there are little groups of twos and threes and fours creating new things and experimenting with one another, what is it that you've got with you to join in, to participate? Do you have some sort of acoustic version of an instrument that you wander around with?
Yep, I'm sitting on it right here. This right here I'm sitting on right here is a version of a cajon that's sort of made in a model for me because I got these F holes and stuff. This is a new thing. But I just pick up a box, right? Now, what I like about this, jazz right here is a two-beat, too. Jazz and bluegrass are kissing cousins. If I was those tubas, it's New Orleans. So music all is just so related to each other. But yeah, I just pick up this box right here and ready to go. Count it off.
Future Man is my guest today, live on Jefferson Public Radio. Information on him, his music, his projects at futuremanlive.com.
Yeah.
And even an exploration into going back to an older tuning for instruments.
Yes.
The tuning, speaking of Mozart and Chevalier de Saint-Georges that we were talking about, a tuning used in that era.
Yeah, during that time, there was something that was called scientific tuning. And instead of A440 where we are now, it was lower, like an A432.
And the A440 refers to...
The frequency of how many cycles per second.
Of an A.
Yeah.
The
of
note
an
A.
Yeah. And so 440 is a little bit higher. In Europe, they go up to A444. But it's interesting that something so precise as music, when we get to the tuning, there's no really solid idea of why we tune where we tune.
And Western music differs greatly from other cultures.
And if you want to get into it, you read a book called Temperament. The more you get into it, the more political it gets.
Political, really?
Political.
About the tuning of music.
Yeah, why would politics even be interested in that? You know, there's got to be something to it, see? And you get into Nazi Germany, they're interested in it. Their propaganda minister, he's interested in it. And, you know, it's varied all around it, you know. But, you know, during the Nazi times, they wanted to gravitate to this 440 thing that had already been around for a while. But music carries a feeling to it. But what I'm interested in is just the pure mathematics. Like, mathematics is a language that's kin with music, see? And the numbers don't lie. And so when we see A432, just for a short lesson of what I'm going to be, some of the rhythm that I'm going to talk about in the class, is there's this mathematics that comes into play. When you add 4 plus 3 plus 2, you get the number 9. And when you start getting all the right numbers, you start seeing the number 9 pop up. So like a 360 degrees of a circle, you know, 3 plus 6 plus 0 equals 9. 180 degrees or something like that. All these numbers, you know, come out equaling 9. And so this 9 has a theme. And so here's the idea that I'm going to show this chemistry. It's so profound, right? When you tune A at 432, what Pythagoras and them learned was that if you separate that number by 9 digits lower, you'll get the next chromatic note. 9 digits higher, you get the next chromatic note higher. So that you have a whole table of 9 that defines the whole chromatic scale. When you double them, you get the octaves of those notes. But I'm going to show this. You're going to see a whole table where the whole thing comes out with a table of 9s. Now, that's something you just can't ignore. There's something going on. Now, when we look at 432, we start seeing that there's 432,000 seconds that makes up the first part of the day, 432,000 seconds that makes up the second part of the day. You start multiplying 432 times itself, and you get a number that hits the number for the speed of light. And you just start seeing there's a puzzle, there's a Tetris thing going on. It's a very interesting Tetris thing going on. And what we're going to just explore is that this idea that music is something, for me, music is something that touches on the idea of a universal science. Like, science is always looking for the theory of everything. And if there's a theory of everything, for me, it's going to reside in music, because music is where the frequencies are. You know what I mean? From the vibration. In the beginning of every myth, every religion, there was something that created a vibration that moved upon the face of the waters of the deep and caused the stuff to start showing up. You know, whether it was the word, the song, the ohm. And so that's what music does. You hit music, you Google sand and sound. You know, they hit a tone, and this flower pollen sitting on the plate is just reacting to this to tone, and it's just making all kinds of geometry. So there's aesthetics going on at the same time. There's form and function and sound going on all at the same time. Now, we take this a little bit further and look at the symbols of music. We look at the bass clef. It looks just like your ear. The shape of your ear, which is the shape of the nautilus shell. You put two of them together, you get the heart shape. See, this is the golden section. This is not accident. See what I mean? The shape of the violin with that coil and scroll at the end is alluding to this same curve that we're getting to. We're getting to something that music is touching the heart of, I believe. See? And so this is the fun part of the journey, looking into the story behind what music is trying to say.
What do you hope to impart in the students in your class? I mean, they're not with you forever.
Oh,
they're with
yes.
you for a limited amount of time. So in the time you have with them, what do you try to give them as a takeaway?
A few simple principles of rhythm. You can take it with you and run forever, right? And we're going to use it in various different ways. I said some of this may interest you, some of it may not. But if you use rhythm, it's used whether you're investing money. There's a golden section principle where they know there's a golden section. When things go up, it's got to come down. And they're actually using golden sections to know when to come in and when to come out. This might not interest you, but it might interest somebody else. We see it in art, in painting. They have the golden section has to do with a short and long section. If you take your first finger, where your joint bends is a short section. The next joint bends is a longer section. That short to long section is the proportions of the cross. Where a cross crosses is not a T, it's not in the middle, it's right about there. And there it is right there. There it is again when your next joint, boom, short, long, right? And I'm going to show you how Fibonacci is unfolding this so that you can use this, right? When you hit a triplet in music, that's your first short, long. You got one beat, then you got two beats, short, long. Now, how many musicians use that triplet? Boom, dun, dun, short, long, boom, dun, dun. This is everywhere. And so we're going to breathe with it, right? And I'm going to show people how you do it with words. If you use the principles of rhythm, even in words, and we're going to recognize how in writing, right, everybody can do this. We're going to show how one of the famous principles, like people know about a haiku. Haikus, five syllables, right next to seven syllables, right next to five syllables. It doesn't matter what you say. If you put it in that rhythm, when you finish, it's a haiku. So we're going to look at other things. The hymn. Every hymn is a beautiful example of a sophisticated haiku. and it always follows a form. And so the common meter of writing is 8 syllables next to 6 syllables. One of the most famous ones, Amazing Grace. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. 8, that saved a wretch like me. 6, I once was lost, but now I'm found. 8, was blind, but now I see. The whole thing keeps that, right? Dr. Seuss, I will not eat green eggs and ham. I will not eat them, Sam, I am. I will not eat them with a box. I will not eat them with a... See what I'm saying? There's rhythm. And before he says anything, he's killing you with the rhythm. And anybody, if you pour your thoughts in that rhythm, it's going to mean something already. It's going to spur your thinking. It's going to spur your line. The rhythm has a juke and a joint to it. You know what I mean? And so once we get into that, man, I've done it all my classes. Now I just start recording and getting people to write something to their mom, because it always comes out. If you pour yourself into these principles.
Did you just say write something to their mom?
Yeah, to write something. But now, because people, what they write is so good, I start off saying, okay, we're going to write something to your significant other, your loved one, or your mother, something. When you finish, when we finish in that class, everyone will have a Mother's Day card. I promise you that, right? That's how simple it is. When you know the principles of something, it takes you for a journey. It actually, the rhythm itself carries you, you know? The rhythm itself will carry you.
This has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for coming by.
I've had a good time.